Nationals 101, a podcast by Nationals fans for Nationals fans. And hey, everybody, we have a pretty good full cast here. I'm Susan.
I'm Frank. And just like our last podcast, we've got a variety. We've got a host of hosts, I suppose. We'll start here in the Alexandria home office. To my left, your right, we have the Nastrodamus himself, Luigi.
Hi.
At Weege on Twitter. And special guest Alyssa Wallace from District Sports Page. That's definitely probably the most important blog we've ever had on the podcast. So thank you for coming, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me. Hi, everyone.
Awesome. And in virtual land, we have, of course, contributing writers Robert Court Swift, live from Central Time Zone, Tennessee.
What's up, everyone? Nice to be back.
We have from the great state of South Carolina, Jared Kobe, SC via DC, our resident statistician.
Hey, everybody.
And just back from our, we sent our correspondent to the winter meetings on his own dime.
Yes. How thoughtful of you.
Stuart Wallace. Yeah, I'm just going to take all the credit.
Well, it's just like a real news organization.
Exactly.
Nobody pays expenses anymore.
Right. But we have... Tyler Clippard specs. It's Stuart Wallace from. I can't even count all the blogs that you write for. So,
Beyond the Box Score, Camden Depot, and I also intern at Baseball Prospectus.
Right, and I've seen you on Baseball Injury News, and I don't know everything.
Yeah. There's been a few.
Kind of a big deal. Well, we have a lot to talk about before we end the podcast, so we should get started on that. That's sort of a weird sentence. Susan, what should we talk about first?
Well, I don't know. We could start with the heavy stuff, or we could start backwards. Do you guys want to start with Pfister? Don't even know her? Anybody?
Somebody take that one.
Talk about needing to be eased into something, right? Yes.
Oh, boy.
Can I tell you?
All right. I'm gonna make a rule. Everyone gets one Pfister joke, and that's it for the pod, because we got a long year. We have a long 2 years with him, you know, on this team. So
this is, you know, with the kids. The kids are actually on the line, so this is a family podcast today. Can I tell you how happy I was when I heard that all the Nats gave up for Pfister was, I mean, let's review. They gave up.
Susan, why don't you tell us what they gave up?
All right. We gave up Lombardozzi, Ian Kroll, and Robbie Ray.
Okay. So.
Laughter and singing.
Oh, my God.
That's our official analysis.
Yeah.
Hashtag analysis.
That sums it up. Yeah.
I mean, wow, right? Wow. I could not be happier with this trade, Frank. I'm
going to let Weege collect himself. Court, what did you? Well, let's go around the virtual room
now. I was a little pissed off because I spent so much time and effort, you know, writing about how they should trade for Rick Porcello.
I know.
then they upped me. You know, I didn't even really look at Pfister. I figured he was, you know.
I think you said that in the post. You were like, look, Pfister's a great guy, but really the guy we should focus on is Porcello because he's reachable. And then.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit younger, but, I mean, Pfister's the better pitcher. So, and to give up less than what I speculated, you know, nothing short of a bonanza, I don't think.
I mean, the only way that trade would have been better if Quantum Kate Upton had appeared on my lap. Instantly.
The quantum.
Yeah, and I like Robbie Ray, too.
Exactly.
You know, followed him since they drafted him. They paid over slot for him way back when. And he had a big year in the minors, but still definitely worth it.
Talent in the hand being worth talent in the bush. You know, the... Wow. Okay.
No.
Yeah, no.
Who's in the
walking
bush,
that Chester? Back. Walking that back. Jared, what do you... Jared, what was your initial reaction to the Pfister trade? Or any reaction. Maybe not your initial.
Well, I think it's great. I was looking at the last three seasons, and his FIP is second on the team, on the Nationals, only behind Steven Strasburg.
I wrote a post about that, actually.
Nice.
So he's a significant upgrade, you know, especially over somebody like Dan Herron or, you know, Edwin Jackson.
Right.
And they didn't really give up a whole lot for him. They gave up one prospect and, you know, a lefty reliever and a bench player. The real question I have is, if Steve Lombardozzi doesn't get playing time in Detroit, will people still complain about him not getting playing time?
I think there will always be room to complain about the lack of Lombardozzi on the field. Stu, do you have any follow-up to that, or... Want to pile
I'm like everyone else. I kind of like the trade. I'm surprised that there wasn't a fourth piece, either Clippert or Storen, going the other way, considering how much of a dumpster fire the bullpen can be out there in Detroit. Robbie Ray's good, you know. I think he tops out ceiling wise as a
number
three starter. I think he was going to say cut in right there.
He'll come back.
Apparently, apparently they're big Lombo fans at the NSA.
Yeah,
you know, Robbie Ray also has value. You know, he can go to the bullpen as a lefty long guy, maybe, or even a back end guy if he adds velocity. You know, it's sort of a plan B for him if he doesn't pan out for their rotation.
I'm back, guys.
Okay, cool.
Hey, there he is.
Sorry, I don't know what happened. Robbie Ray, 3 ceiling. Lombo is Lombo. You know, he might be league average in a good year. Kroll, he's a loogie.
Something Washington was thankful to finally have at the end of the year. So that was probably the.
Exactly. There's a nice article written in at BP and also at Bless You Boys, which is the Detroit Tigers SB Nation blog. There are a couple of good articles talking about Robbie Ray and, you know, his ceiling is a loogie. So kind of, you know, the Nats essentially sold high on him.
Okay.
The only thing is, you know, Dave Dombrowski, he's as good as it gets. What does he know that no one else does?
There is the velocity decline on Fister's four-seam fastball over the last 4 years.
Yep. And, you know, he's very tall. He's 6'8". He's a sinker guy. The aging curve may not be quite as nice to him as other guys. And like Weege was saying, you know, he's only 87, 88 on a good day. The aging curve is a little more steep as you progress. So you're wondering if there might be some sort of injury potential just because he's so tall and he may not be repeating his mechanics in a very consistent fashion that may pretend to some sort of injury, which says, you know, hey, you get a great year of Doug Fister and after that it's poo. And it's like, okay, now who won it? Who won the deal? So those are my thoughts. But overall, I still think that the Nats made out like bandits.
All right. Alyssa, do you have anything to add? I mean, we've sort of gone around the table the long way. But
I think one of the things that I'm most excited about is to see Doug Fister in the National League. I think especially I'm glad this is happening this year with Matt Williams because, you know, they've been – and I'm sure we'll talk more about that later. But, you know, one of the things he stresses – using strategies like defensive shifts and things like that. And I think to put Doug Fister in that dynamic and like you all said, you know, adding someone who would be a second man in the rotation elsewhere, I think, you know, I'm excited to see what happens. And I agree. I think Fister has been a little bit on the, you know, sort of the downswing of his potential in the last couple seasons. But at the same time, that's been in the American League and that's been with the Tigers in a completely different ball club from a lot of standpoints. And, you know, I'm excited to see, are we going to see sort of a resurgence because of the new dynamic he's going to fit into?
My initial thoughts was that it really was sort of a vote of confidence in the defense, which sort of at times struggled last year, especially Zim and throwing across the diamond, because you need a good defense to make a guy like Doug Fister work. He's the promise, you know, he could be the promise of John Lennon, right? The idea that, look, Court shaking his head. He's so mad. I said that for you. But the idea that, you know, that you can succeed as that kind of pitcher. Do you see him? I guess I see him pitching fourth still based on how lefties and righties go, but I wouldn't be averse to him. The only reason I'm averse to him pitching higher in the order is just kind of how the balance of lefties and righties work. I don't, if he pitched second and everybody else moved down a slot, I don't think it's, I was thinking I would do like Strasburg, Jordan, Fister, Geo, but that doesn't really make sense with the handedness. I think that's how I would rank the pitchers from top to bottom. Plus guy, I don't know.
Yeah, you could do that. Although I think in some respects, maybe fifth is best for him. Just to do, you know, the right-left-right-left-right thing. But, yeah, he slots 4-5, and he would still be an adequate 3 as well. It's just how do you want to play those cards? him being a sinker baller and not having quite the velocity of the top three. You know, do you kind of scoot him in there and just kind of make the other guys even more effective? You know, as the week, you know, or as the series progresses.
Have the Nats answered their? You could just I'm asking more questions. Have the Nats answered that? In a way, they're in that same spot they were at the beginning of the year, though. Signing a dynamite starter bolsters the rotation, but it doesn't really give you the answer as the fifth or sixth starter. It makes your fourth starter passable, more than passable, much more than Dan Heron. But are they still in the same spot they were last year, where they don't really have a fifth and sixth guy in that at that end, you know, in case of injury?
I think we can presumptively eliminate Ross Detweiler from the opening day starting rotation.
You think so?
I believe so. With the, Stu's going to be able to say more about this, but with a bad back and the, and Sovietologists who have turned Nats watchers listen to everything Rizzo says, and pretty much nothing Rizzo has said has amounted to an endorsement of a. Of a Detweiler spot in the rotation. So it looks like we're seeing, Rizzo seems to be telegraphing a Detweiler in the lefty long man role. I don't know, Stu, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'd agree. He did have back surgery, and who he got it from, and I'm only assuming what procedure was used. It's a very minimally invasive one that, you know, recovery time is much shorter. He got the top. He got the best of the best working on his back, but at the same time, you know, it is back surgery. Mm. And of course, with being a pitcher, everything comes from your trunk. So it'll be interesting to see what his recovery trajectory looks like. With that being said, yeah, I just don't see him amassing a whole lot of innings. I can see where they want to protect him in some respects, putting him in the bullpen, being a long man, maybe even working on a third pitch, you know. See where that takes them. But, yeah, he hasn't had any resounding, you know, seal of approval from the front office saying, yep, he's still our 4 or 5 guy, you know. He would pair very well with Ohlendorf, you know, being the long man out of the bullpen.
I remember hearing sometime towards the end of the year that the front office wanted Detweiler to pitch Winter League. And then, you know, we saw the blip that came out a few weeks after the season that he was not going to pitch. So maybe that's where some of the kind of bad mouthing might come from, is they wanted him to build up more and he's not. And so like, well, if you're not going to put the work in, then we'll slot you in the bullpen.
Well, again,
sort of reading tea leaves.
I mentioned it on the last podcast. There was a de facto 3-week lockout in between Major League Baseball and the Caribbean leagues. There was no winter. Mm-hmm. There was no winter accord. So it might have just been that he was not willing to take the risk of committing to Winter League if there may have not been Winter League for 40-man roster players this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe there was enough of a gap there that he didn't want to shut it down and start it back up.
Exactly.
You know, there could be legitimate reasons.
It was 3 weeks. The Venezuelan League had been going. I mean, it was 3 weeks after opening day in Venezuela before the Winter Accord was signed. So that's not insignificant, and I believe it has had some effect on definitely the Venezuelan league. I don't follow it as closely as I ought to.
That's an excellent point.
Awesome. Hold on 1 second. Let's sorry, brevity, levity and brevity. I think we should move on unless there's more Pfister thoughts. If anybody has Pfister thoughts, but let's go to the.
I have one thought about about Pfister and the defense. The Nats, if Pfister is going to work, then this defensive shifting is going to have to be very good. In the National League, the Nats in 2013 were ninth in range runs. Okay, remember what range runs means? It's the number of runs that you save by getting to balls that other guys would not get to.
Which was key for a sinker balling pitcher.
Right, it was
right.
Key for a sinker. I mean, they're certainly not the Giants, nor the Cubs, nor the Dodgers. The Nats are only marginally better than the Mets in the range run category, which is really quite worrying, considering the total lack of range at third base that the Mets were displaying.
Right.
So that the shifting is going to have to get better, and we'll talk about the defense when we talk about the skipper.
Yeah, which Alyssa brings up is maybe the perfect time for all this. Yeah. So. But let's take a break from trades and talk about one free agent signing, Mr. McLouth. from the Baltimore Orioles. Some people are saying
Clan McLeod.
Right. It does autocorrect to the Highlander constantly. But Nate McLeod, he's going to be bench depth in the outfield. Jared, what do you make of Nate McLeod in the signing? And I guess a lot of people made, you know, that he is making probably a bit more than he should be as far as being a backup outfielder. But just give us your thoughts on the Nats signing Nate McLeod.
I thought it was good for outfield depth. But he provides the left-handed bat off the bench for the outfield. But I was looking at his slash lines against righties, and they're just horrible. So there isn't a whole lot of – I mean, I know that they say he can play all three outfield positions, so I think he'll be good for spelling outfielders. But other than that, you know, it's good to have the outfield depth because our outfielders tend to get hurt a lot. So,
yeah, we have some aging and injury prone or young and injury prone outfielders that seem to like to run into walls. But the weird thing, not the weird thing, but I noticed that when I was looking at him defensively, at least just gleaning at Fangraphs, he hasn't been a plus defender in a while. He's been a below average defender, and part of that might be playing in places like Baltimore where the wall's a little weird. Or I think the wall's a little weird, but I don't know. I mean, I guess he really is here to be the bat off the bench. Who's got thoughts about that more so?
Go ahead.
I think for a lot of, if we're talking about a different ball club, I say he's likely to be their starting outfielder. And I think it was the Washington Post did an interesting piece about, you know, looking at it from a pure value standpoint. He actually, in terms of, you know, his contract, I actually don't necessarily think the Nationals overspent for him in the role, considering the fact that obviously, I mean, Bernadita played, 25 games last year, Tyler Moore somewhere around 30, I believe.
And, yeah.
And I think, you know, to say he's not going to be making a lot of appearances, I think we see how Bryce Harper plays defensively and a high-risk player, which you like to have. But at the same accord, I think it's a bench role with the understanding that I think we're going to see a lot of him this season.
So funny you should mention the Shark. So let's compare Roger Bernardina to Nate McLeod, because they're both left-handed outfielders. They both have a lot of range, right?
Yep.
And they both have, you know, potentially meme-worthy, you know, name possibilities. Okay. So Nate McLeod
has same guy,
right? Except that Nate McLeod has a WRC plus, that is weighted runs created index to league average, of 90. So he is almost since 2010. Which means he is almost an average outfielder, this is per Fangraphs.
Right.
Bernardina, on the other hand, is 84. Now, that's not so bad, but consider that McLeod is a better base runner and is not so bad defensively, and they have almost equal playing time. I will take McLeod as a definite upgrade over Bernardina.
Well, the bench outdid itself as terrible last year. They just got no production anywhere from it. And we'll be talking on the blog, by the way, about things like weighted runs created. Not directly yet. I finished the Overture of WAR, which I think does a good job of explaining WAR without really, like, weighting everything down. I got it down to the, you just have to trust these parts for now, and we'll talk about it. But I think, you know, that kind of stuff will be coming up, and it's helpful to look at. Do you think that, so that was him, and you got Hairston on the bench, and then you're looking at, let's parlay this out to the bench. Tyler Moore's still on the bench, it looks like. Corey Brown was sent down, and Danny Espinoza looks like he's the three quarters, well, I'll say the half second baseman. He's not his job, but they definitely made it clear that Anthony Rendon's going to have to keep his second baseman job, which I don't think he'll struggle doing. But they seem to be very excited about Espinoza. Is there anyone have any thoughts about whether that's a is that trade talk, or do they think, do you really think that they're actually excited that he might do something? And does it matter if he can, if he has his bat? That's the other question.
Absolutely. Corey Brown's gone. He was DFA'd to make room for McClough.
Right. Did they retain? So, did he go back to the minors, or did he just leave?
He's still limbo.
He's still in limbo.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was gonna say. I think he's still. Yeah. They still have a couple of days to make a decision on him. But I see Espinosa being the next Lombardozzi slash Ben Zobrist. He has his skill set is superior defensively. Can play second. Can play short. He's got a great arm. Stick him out in left field here and there.
Okay.
Why not? Every so often he'll run into something. Fair enough. It seems like he's had time to recover from whatever injuries he's had. I don't want to go down that road.
Scott Boras says he's healthy, so I think we can all trust Scott Boras.
Yeah. So I could see him, you know, if he's willing just to, you know, I think last year probably humbled him quite tremendously, where he's saying, all right, let me just get back on the field. Let me stay in D.C.,
right?
You know, instead of trying to kick and scratch my way back from Syracuse. So I could see where he might be, you know, conducive to a bench player's role, saying, all right, today you're giving Rendon a breather at second. Get in there. All right, you're coming in for Desi, you know, for a late inning replacement. You know, go get your bat. You know, things like that. I could see where that might be his new normal, so to speak.
Well, the skipper did mention in his Matt Williams did mention in his interview that he was looking to give the regulars more days off, and a Danny Espinosa off the bench and a Nate McClough off the bench gives the Nats much more positional flexibility than they've had, I think, in many years.
Court?
Yeah, I agree kind of with it. Everything that's been said so far. I'd just like to point out that Danny Espinosa is also the only other real shortstop in the organization. There's a lot of defensive questions about Zach Walters. You know, he makes as many errors as Ian Desmond did in the minors.
Right.
His kind of upside, again, he's got a shotgun for an arm like Espinosa, but maybe he fits better long-term at third or second. Espinosa can still play a major league shortstop if something were to happen to Ian, which, you know, he missed 30 games just 2 years ago.
Right.
And that's hard to replace. I'm not sure there's necessarily that many guys. Because if you get rid of Espinosa or if you demote him, you've got to replace that middle infield role. And I really like what Stewart's saying about, you know, throwing him out in the outfield. He's got a much better arm than Lombardozzi does. He's much more athletic than Lombo is.
Right.
And, yeah, if he's been humble like Stewart says and will do whatever it takes to get on the field, he could be a Zobrist type. You know, he's got power, elite defense up the middle, so he's a valuable guy to keep around.
He's almost worth it. I mean, he is worth it, I think. That was sort of when he was struggling with the bat last year, some of the stuff we were talking about and certainly I was writing about was that when the lineup's healthy, Danny Espinosa is your seventh or eighth batter anyway. You don't need him to be a massive producer because he's saving you runs in the infield. And if you can get a guy who can do that in late innings of games or whatever, that's sort of, you know, everyone gets very caught up with the fact that he can't hit and forgets that every team has a guy that somebody can't hit, you know?
The trouble with that, of course, is you know, we're very emotionally engaged in the game. And
you can tell by your voice how emotionally engaged.
I'm extremely emotionally engaged in the game. And, you know, it's hard to shake the image of Danny Espinosa just destroying Cliff Lee in 2010 every time he stepped up. I mean, it was like his superpower, you know.
Was Cliff beating Cliff Lee.
He was beating Cliff Lee. And so when you see him struggle at the plate, it's hard to square that with the image of, you know, me sitting in 401 laughing at the Phils fans as he takes Cliff Lee deep for the second time in the game.
Hobie thinks you're full of it, by the way, clearly.
I was just going to say Espinosa was a three-war player 2 years in a row.
Yep.
Right.
You know, mostly by defense, obviously. The hitting is always, you know, especially on base, patience, you know, strikeouts have been a problem. But, I mean, this is not a guy you just give away for nothing. This is not a throw-in in a trade. It's not a guy, you know, if you can teach him how to hit again, you've got something here.
Yeah,
and then,
if you're going
to trade him when he's got more value.
If you're going to have a guy who's not a great hitter, I'd rather than not a great hitter who's going to run into a ball and crush it for a double than the not great hitter who's going to maybe scratch out a single or something. So
like the guy that just got traded.
Yeah, like some, I don't know, I can't even think of a player who maybe is really good at hitting singles that die a foot past the horn. But
mediocre when you say really good.
Yeah.
For the record, gentlemen, two such guys were traded away from the Nationals organization this winter. Two such guys. You were forgetting about Billy Burns.
Yes, Billy Burns. Wow. Well, maybe I'm not forgetting about Billy Burns. I was just giving someone the opportunity to segue to the final bit of our trade talk, which you did wonderfully, by the way. Nice segue.
You know, we're smooth like that. Listen, so Billy Burns for Blevins, folks. What do you all think about that trade?
I'm the host here. Burns for Blevins. What do you all people think about that, sir? No. I like it. I mean, they got rid of Kroll. They needed to replace that part of the bullpen. And so there you go. As far as Burns, I understand that he was the minor league player of the year that they got rid of.
Yes.
But I'm, like I said, you know, talent in the hand is worth talent in the minors. I feel like if you know you're going to get a guy back that can contribute or reasonably think can contribute, then you give away some potential because, you know, especially with the outfield, they're kind of set. They're stacked on the outfield in the minors, and I think they have a lot of depth. And adding a guy like McLeod kind of bolsters that too. So if you got to give up that position, they're, you know, it's not like infield or catcher where they're sort of running thin at the position.
I have two thoughts on that, however. One about Burns, because he's one of the guys that's been dealt or has been involved in transactions that I've actually seen in person. Now, back when Ross Detweiler made his rehab start in Potomac on June the 8th, I saw Burns hit an infield single, and then on a throwing error, suddenly was on third base, and then he scored on the very next batter when there was yet another infield single by Caleb Ramsey. Now, this guy is... he's a lot of fun, and Fangraphs has called him the homeless man's Billy Hamilton. So it will be very interesting to see if he can develop more of a game and become, you know, a much better Tony Campana, I guess, is the betting line on him.
I think, too, if I'm not mistaken, isn't Ricky Henderson part of the A's minor league system now?
Oh, that's a good point.
And so I think... while, you know, we obviously will see the positives coming out of this, I think there's going to be a point where this is going to sting a little bit when we see that aggressive base running and those sort of, you know, aspects of what we're going to be missing kind of really brought forward, I think, if he's under his guiding, his wisdom, basically.
He will transmit the base stealing dharma. There's lingering doubt that I have about this trade, and as much as I love Blevins and his reaction to being traded to the Nats, I always like it when a guy likes to come to my town. I predict that he's going to give me and a bunch of other people a tremendous heartburn this year.
That kind of pitcher.
Well, it's not in the walks and it's not in the strikeouts, but it's in his batted ball statistics. If you look at his fly ball ratio, he's at about 40% fly balls. 40% fly balls.
So lots of things in the air.
Lots of things in the air, and he has a pretty, you know, he's got almost the league average home run fly ball ratio of about 10%, but that was in Oakland, right?
Canyon.
Right. I mean, with the thick, you know, in the cold, right? I don't know how happy I'm going to be on a Saturday afternoon watching him trot in and just seeing fly balls sailing everywhere in July, because you know how small Nats Park plays in the middle of the summer.
It's a home run park, so we'll have to we'll keep track of his FIP and his XFIP as it goes along, because exactly.
It could be very interesting.
We'll see.
I think we're also going to get heartburn if he is hit, or if his numbers against lefties continue to be worse than his numbers against lefties.
Yeah, they were hoping that was anomalous, I think. Yeah. I read. They were like...
And I'm hoping that too, but again, it'll be interesting to see.
He had a weird reverse split this year. Over his career, he he takes care of the lefties as good as righties. But yeah, 2013 was kind of odd with Blevins.
But they used them. They used them as much against righties as lefties, right, which was interesting. The innings pitched were about the same.
Were about equal, yeah. Same amount of plate appearances, yeah.
And that's been his MO. He hasn't been a loogie for them.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a four-pitch guy. Nothing really plus pitch-wise, you know. Mm-hmm. But he can handle both sides of the plate fairly adequately. And as far as Burns, 80 speed, that's it.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty even trade if you take into consideration that the Nats are trying to win now.
I agree.
Okay.
And there's questions that Burns, whether or not he'll be able to hit at higher levels.
Yes.
You know, you can't steal first. And so if he
exactly.
can't, he taught himself to, or he's teaching himself to switch hit, I should say, since he's become a professional.
Okay.
Which is what has led to his improvement from the left side, you know, against right-handed pitchers. But that's also obviously something that's still a work in progress, and whether or not that'll be able to stick at full season, double A, triple A, you know, I think there are questions about that.
Yeah. Listening to people talk over the last week or so, he'll be a major leaguer, but it'll be as a pinch runner, fifth outfield type guy if he can hit, and that's the big if. And I didn't know he was switch hitting, so that obviously, you know, that puts him in with like an Espinosa. There's added value right there, just having the ability to switch hit and put that in people's minds as far as lineup construction and relievers, bringing in relievers and things like that. So
okay,
well, pretty good trade.
let me get to the next phase here of the podcast, and let's start with the man in the Santa hat, since I'm going to ask about a wish list. Jared is the only one festive today. But the Nats added a reliever, they added a starting pitcher, they added an outfield bench player. They might have something in Espinosa. What do the Nats need? Have they addressed these concerns? Are they done, or could they be done? What else, if anything, do the Nats need going into 2014? Do you think? We'll start with Jared.
I've been thinking about this for the last couple of weeks. I'm not entirely comfortable with Danny Espinosa as the middle infield bench player, but if they are, defensively, I think he's okay, but from a spelling the middle infielders for a day or two during the week, you know, are we just giving up three outs? You know, are those going to be three strikeouts in that game? You know, those are the concerns I have. We know that Danny Espinosa can be a pretty good player and can walk into some doubles and home runs, but you know, after last season, my comfort level with Danny Espinosa is slightly above zero.
0.1 plus.
I'm not entirely comfortable with Jonathan Solano as the backup catcher.
Okay.
I think they could still look for a backup catcher.
John Buck.
And as for the bullpen, it all depends on who the fifth starter is and how all that shakes out.
Okay.
You know, if Detweiler can be the fifth starter, or if it's Tanner Roark or somebody else, you know.
Roark.
You know, if Detweiler is the long lefty, then it's okay. But you know, everything else is everything else depends on, you know, who the fifth starter is, I think.
I really think that we're going to need a catcher here. I kind of agree with you, Jared. The Solano situation, and we lost Nieto from the minors. So I think that we're really kind of looking for someone to help Ramos out when he, you know, hopefully he won't get injured this year. But the past at least 2 years, he's missed several games. So I'm hoping that we can get someone as a backup catcher who could be strong and who could possibly play every day if he needed to, if Ramos is out.
In those catcher everyday stretches for like a week or two at a time.
Mm.
At some point, Ramos, you know, once is an accident, twice is coincidence, and three times becomes a trend. You know, same with Zim, who, you know, God bless him, has been injured in every different part of his body possible. But at some point, I don't know if he doesn't have enough calcium or something. He's just kind of...
They call him Mr. Glass.
That was on this week, and I stopped everything and watched the end of that movie. I love that movie. let's not bestow Mr. Glass as a nickname to anybody on the Nats. Let's not will that in. All of this would have been solved if we had signed Robinson Cano like I had clamored for. You wouldn't. Oh, they're like, boy, we don't even need a catcher. Just, it's fine. He'll hit a home run. I tend to agree with those. Is there anybody have any different thoughts? Any sort of different places that we didn't touch upon? Or
Tanaka.
Oh, yeah, right.
Tanaka, who incidentally might not post if you've been following.
Now, would that be the worst thing in the world?
If
he wasn't available until next year?
Would he
fit better in the Nats' current roster? Yeah, I saw a post on MLB Trade Rumors talking from the Red Sox point of view that he actually worked out better for them if he were to be held up because they don't have a surplus next year like they do this year. And I got to thinking maybe for the Nationals it could work too if he's not available until next year, and then you could go after him and let one of Pfister and Zimmerman go via trade.
And it's funny you should mention Zimmerman in that, because Tanaka and Zimmerman are, I mean, you heard me jumping up and down with excitement at his Japanese League stats last time. I feel that they're essentially interchangeable pitchers. And everybody knows that Zimmerman hates this area, apparently. That seems to be the conventional wisdom. I can't remember where I read it. The Nats have been trying to extend him now for quite a while.
Right, and he
has been.
I don't blame him. Even if he didn't hate it here, it makes financial sense for anybody to sort of, if you're having success like he's been having, you know.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true, of course. But you know, there's something to winning now as a player,
right?
I think A-Rod definitely would be the
poster,
the poster boy for win now on all sides of the ledger. So, of course, on the other side for win later, you got Bobby Bonilla, Mets' highest paid outfielder,
still getting $1 million a year,
$2 million,
still getting $2 million paid.
A year. That's an amazing contract that they worked out, that he gets paid $2 million a year for like 100 years.
I think Paul Konerko's is structured similarly. He gets like $20 this year, and then like in 2024, it's like $10 million or something right. Silly like that. Yeah.
Creative bookkeeping. You know what? Yes. The other place that I guess people have brought up online I forgot about is really first base. People are worried about LaRoche, particularly with his down year last year, and particularly when he played against lefties. And is there a need to and this brings into some of the questions we got on Twitter. Somebody else asked about how would you Stephanie, Zim's taking fielding at first base. People have clamored for Rendon to go back to third, which is his natural position, and then having somebody at second, I guess, I don't know, but getting rid of LaRoche completely and replacing him with Zimmerman straight away, or finding someone who can come in on the days when you're facing tough lefties and play first base. Is that a question still in people's minds? I don't know. I've wondered also, I guess, an ancillary, is there any reason why you wouldn't, if you thought, rather than shifting all those people around, is there a way that you could teach Rendon to also play first base and sort of stop moving the entire diamond and just sort of have the one malleable position player go to the position of need? I mean, it doesn't seem like first would be that hard for him.
And
to learn.
Stick the one guy with the throw who leads all baseball in throwing errors since 2010 in the place where he's most likely to commit throwing errors, rather than take advantage of a favorable platoon split, eliminate his throwing errors and bring in, say, a Danny Espinosa to play defense at second base or shortstop.
Kind of, yeah. I was thinking.
To me, I see no. There is no bad, nothing bad in the proposed Zimmerman LaRoche platoon. It also gives Ryan Zimmerman a quasi day off from the diving and rib cracking that he usually takes as we see him play third base. And yeah, I mean, I am for it.
I'm for it as well. I kind of got some flack for saying that earlier last season, but I agree the same. I think we preserve Zimmerman longer if we shift him.
Would Zimmerman go for that though? I mean, do you think that he would be like, okay, yeah, no problem. First base it is. Like, I don't know if he would be into it.
He was quoted in the paper as saying he's okay with taking the ball, like taking practice over there and filling in here and there. He's definitely made it clear that he doesn't want to be the first baseman right now. But I think ultimately he's just still at a place where he thinks he's the way he said it, he goes, I still think I'm the best third baseman on the team, which I think totes that great line of confidence and arrogance. That's kind of perfect because I think he is still probably the best third baseman when he's healthy. And he looked much more like a great third baseman at the end of the year versus throwing at the beginning of the year.
If it's only for
go for it.
If it's only for 10 or 15 games, I mean, why not just have Rendon do it? You know, I think it's, I don't know, it could be Matt Williams just trying to shake things up.
You'd lose his range, though. I mean, these are...
Well, he lost range because he was playing in because his arm was terrible.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm working off the assumption that he'll go back, and, I mean, he won't be the Zim he used to be, but he won't be what we saw last year either.
First half of 2013 Zim, which was a special kind of ugly.
I mean, I think he'll be a plus defender over there, and I think he'll be better than Anthony Rendon would be.
It would also be Rendon's third position in a year that he'd play at the professional level. You know, granted, he was the third baseman coming into the organization, but he played shortstop, and then he went to second. He learned second in a month. And then you'd have to send him back to third. I don't know. And he didn't look great at third when he played third with the Nats. He looked very jittery, and I don't know. It all goes away. If Zimmerman has problems throwing at third, then this becomes a pressing issue, obviously. But right. If Zimmerman can play third and wants to play third, I feel like he should get the preference to play third rather than letting Anthony Rendon learn how to play third at the professional level during these kind of key years where you think that the team is, you know, playoff bound. Sorry for that word.
Can Harrison play first?
I've thought about that too. I don't know.
That's not a bad question.
I mean, that's the other logical.
That's almost the easiest solution if he can.
Because all he does is murder lefties.
Right.
Which he didn't really do last year, though. Well, okay, fine.
Yeah, but maybe if he gets more, if he's coming in more and more off the bench as a platoon first baseman, you know, I'm all about. No. Putting LaRoche in the best opportunity to succeed. He was pretty good at defense. He wasn't great as good as we've seen him at defensively at first, but you know, if you can just eliminate the hard parts of the game for him now.
April.
If you could just sign him to a 3-month deal where he only plays in the warm months and doesn't have to travel. We could put him on that Phil Jackson when he stopped traveling with the Lakers or wanted to stop traveling with the Lakers.
The Vin Scully.
Vin Scully. Right. The Sam Huff deal. Right.
So Tyler Moore has no future at first.
Yeah. I guess that was sad how we all sort of dismissed that. No one even thought about Tyler Moore at first. No, I don't. I don't know if he has a future with the Nationals personally. I feel like he's... I don't want to say persona non grata. I think they like him, but I don't think he's shown anything that he can do really well. He's very good at Triple A. He goes back to Syracuse and he plays well, and he can retire the best Sky Chief in the organization. But I don't know. Anyone think differently about Tyler Moore?
No.
No. Anybody want to defend Tyler Moore? He's cute. We'll give him that. Timo's cute, and I can hear people yelling at me on Twitter right now.
I was.
He's got that great Southern drawl, but.
I mean, and he signed a ball for us while Syracuse was in town. So.
There you go.
Oh, very cool.
All right, then he's a favorite on this podcast. That's all. That's all it took was one autograph. I'm gonna go to the two other questions we got from Twitter, that were serious. I'm sorry, I had a lot of really.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, the two other actual baseball questions.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah. Why haven't you stopped?
I still want to know how I get my invitation to this.
Frank, I'll let you take that one first.
Yeah. Are you really Masson commenter? No, for the last. I wish.
So, okay, who are these people who write these comments? I want to know because they these comments.
It sounds like a great post piece. Like,
you should friend request everyone that comes through.
Like, yeah, just
it's like I have no idea who these people are.
It's got to be a good mix of troll and people who are sincere about it.
These are not sentiments that I hear when I, you know. These are not the. I can tell you that these are not the weeknights at Nats Park crowd.
No, but I've met these people at spring training. I've definitely met the person who loves player X, and that's almost like why they love him, because they were like, they remember how special and fun it is to go to spring training and see Lombo was the guy I was sitting with, and like that's what they want. They want to know that they were the guy who remembered this Lombardozzi kid. That's part of it. I don't want to get off on too much of a rant because I've already gotten a bit of a reputation for being kind of harsh about it.
Well, I mean, so, certainly, I mean,
which is the direction this Boggin podcast is going. By the way, we are going to get harsher and harsher with people that say ridiculous
things. Again, it's a very emotional game. I mean, I'm when the Nats are in town, I'm in the park literally two nights a week, you know, for as much as work will allow me. And good things delight me and bad things upset me.
I'm a simple man. It's a simple game, really. And, hit the ball.
And people get really attached, but holy cow, man.
It is when it seems like somebody's been watching a completely different thing than you. It's kind of scary.
Well, I mean, the Pfister trade felt like a middle school breakup.
I will.
I mean, it's just. I mean, I thought the post where Twitter was uniformly for the Pfister trade, and Facebook was almost entirely opposed. Who are these people?
Hey, like, at least they care.
I know
that's
they
true.
Care. I know they care, but I'm like, is this like the Saturday Sunday crowd? Because I feel like the Saturday Sunday crowd at the park is a very different crowd from.
It's a bigger crowd.
Well, yeah, from the weeknight crowd that I hang. The weeknight crowd is a scorebooks and strike zones crowd, and the weekend crowd is a little different. I feel
peanuts and cracker jacks.
That's exactly what
yeah. Yeah.
Didn't mean to step on the joke. No. There, sorry. Well, let me get to one of the serious questions. Unless if somebody else wants to comment on the, I feel like we'll talk about this more now that Mass and Commenter is a thing. and I know who it is, and they've said it's okay for me, because that was the most popular post we've done in a while. It was a little funny. It was a poking the bear a little with people who ask ridiculous questions, but it was also a really good opportunity to like illuminate the good things about Doug Pfister and the trade. It was like, this is a great way to deal with it. So I felt like it was the best of both worlds.
It was a new media Phil Wood.
It was. It really was the right. The Phil fake Phil Wood and
2.0.
Right.
Phil Wood 2.0.
Right. But let me ask one of the serious questions as well. How do you see the fake FP? The most serious question comes from fake FP. How do you see the Storen Clifford Soriano dynamic working out next season? The three wise men, I guess, of the bullpen, the closers.
The three amigos.
The three amigos. It's an interesting dynamic because, Clifford's, I think, the best of those three guys. Soriano was supposed to be the closer and definitely, on top of the fact that everyone got really pissed off at him at times, also actually struggled. It wasn't actually just we were all mad at him. He definitely struggled with the closer's role. And Storen is like the third rail of closing. It's you either, love and trust him or you adamantly don't. These are your three prime back of the rotation pitchers. It could all come together in a beautiful montage of pitching, or it could be a dumpster fire, to use the phrase from earlier today. So let's start with Alyssa. We haven't started with Alyssa yet.
What I was going to say was, do you think that they thought that this was going to come back this year? I mean, all of us threw out one of those names at least when we all expected them to be out the door for Easter. So I almost feel like, I don't know, I think the sentiment among the three is kind of really. I followed Soriano back when he was in New York quite a bit, and the skill level is there. I mean, the thing was, it was like he wanted the margin of leading to be narrow every time he came out on the mound. Like, if you put him in a non-save situation, it quickly became a
heartburn
situation.
City.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And a edge of your seat, someone else warming the bullpen kind of situation. So, the same with Clifford. I've always been a fan of his. I'm interested to see how it pans out, but I want to see someone in a permanent role. I want someone to be designated the closer and stay the closer. I know, but that's idealist.
I'm shaking my head.
Yeah.
I'm shaking my head vigorously. The closer is the biggest fraud on the game of baseball. And it is because we overvalue the save statistic. The save statistic is bunk.
All right. Well, I'm not going to let you turn this into a political.
Kill the save. I mean, the save is terrible. It did make us appreciate relievers, which was nice, but it overstates the importance of, you know, coming in the ninth inning with a 3-run lead, which, you know, Rafa Soriano can do, but Tyler Clippard can come in with a 1-run lead. I mean, Tyler Clippard is the most shut down man in the Nats bullpen.
Right.
Absolutely.
And he should come in whenever is absolutely necessary.
The heart of the order is kind of up towards the end of the game.
Exactly. You know, FP always says sometimes the save comes in the seventh inning, which is
the most progressive thing he says in stat wise.
You know,
and he's dead right, of course.
He's dead right. You know, we rag on him a lot, and actually we love him in a kind of scrappy utility man broadcaster way, but that is the best point he's got, and you've got to go with Clippard in that. You know, no more of this your good guy hanging out in the bullpen.
All right, what about out there? What do you guys think?
If I could jump in here real quick before I take off.
Okay, yeah, Court's got to go.
I mean, I liked having three high-end pitchers at the end of the game, you know, for a lot of the reasons Luigi was just saying, that, you know, it's all about the leverage, not the save. I liked it last year. I like it this year. You know, hopefully it works out better. But I thought it was the right move to get Soriano, at least from a standpoint of adding the depth there to the back end of the bullpen. And, you know, hopefully storing pitches like he has in the past. And, you know, because we saw in the playoffs what the Cardinals bullpen could do when it was sort of shut down arm after shut down arm. And that's what it's going to take for the Nats to sort of make that next jump. So I like having all three of them. I hope they do what they're supposed to do last year, this year.
We'll quickly say thanks to Court for appearing on the show. He's got some outstanding obligations. Our Court Swift
thanks,
on
Court.
Twitter. And he'll be holding Court on the blog, I'm sure, Sue. So thanks.
Well, thanks, guys, and
Good
luck without me.
All right. We're lost without you already. But enough about Lombo. Sorry, Stuart, Jared, I don't know if you guys
want to. Yeah, I'll jump in real quick. I think that, like what Court was saying, if you all three can do their job, it's fantastic. That's a big if, though, except for Clippard. Soriano has a bit of a contract issue. I don't know if you can get rid of him. And if Storn can pitch like he did those last couple of weeks, oh, goodness, that's unreal. Another layer to that is the fact that Clippard is getting more expensive, and he's also the most valuable. So it wouldn't surprise me if they trade him during the season.
Okay. Ouch.
Yeah, he's getting more expensive.
Yeah.
Compared to Storn, you can't get rid of Soriano, unfortunately. That $14 million AAV is just going to, you know, who wants to take that over? You know?
Is this his last year? It was only a two-year deal, right?
Did he have an option year? Not like they would pick it up.
I can't remember. You know? We'd you look
I
it up.
I think the option is based on how many games he finishes over the first 2 years.
Ah, okay.
So if he hits a certain number of games finished, that option is automatically picked up, I believe.
Oh, okay. So maybe it would behoove the Nats to kind of, yeah. Oh, man. You look tired. Sorry. Why don't you take a break? we'll get Storn. We'll get Storn to close. It's cool, man.
Sorry.
120. Yeah. The option, according to Kotz, the 2015 option is guaranteed with 120 games finished in 2013-14. Yeah.
All right.
Ooh. Okay. There we go. There's another layer that may.
So the clock is ticking, and having those three means that it's almost like now we're talking about extending somebody's innings or, you know, saving Soriano. We're talking about limiting the number of games he'll play.
Yeah. And just to throw another monkey wrench into the works, Craig Stammen's pretty good as a single inning reliever.
He is.
So there's a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of upside to the back end of the bullpen.
I also think it'll
be a lot of fun to watch how it pans out.
With the trouble with Ryan Matthews last year, breaking his hand and then coming back and sort of like, maybe there is room for all three of them, because I think that he was really sort of the seventh inning guy up in until he kind of lost his mind. And his hand from punching.
And his walk-up music.
I was just going to say, that's when it all went south.
Right. Someone needs to come in to roar. I think that's the new Katy Perry song, and that's a good song. I'm sorry, I like it. I'm going to admit to it. Zim will. Heather will put Zim up to come in. <That's> the... but yeah, so maybe there is room for three of them at least for a little while they figure out the other stuff. I'm going to throw out this last question, and it's a simple yes or no whether you know it, because we have not talked about Matt Williams' press conference or any of the ephemera yet, and we're coming along. We just had some very interesting things happen. But John Feng asked me earlier, he talked about how left-handed hitters, and they have a supposed preference for having pitches that are down and in on their left side. He goes, but I never hear about that with right-handed hitters and right-handed so do right-handers have that same preference? He goes, I'd never hear about that, and I just didn't know if it was – and I Googled it, and I didn't come up with anything quick, and I didn't know if they did, and nobody talks about it because right-handers are the sort of the norm, really, and it's just sort of like, duh, or if it's – no, there's something specific about lefties. Does anybody know that answer or know where to find it?
Yes and no. Being a lefty hitter, down and in was my wheelhouse.
Right.
The bat speed you generate down and in is disgusting.
Is there a reason is there a reason why righties couldn't do the same thing?
No, not really. It just kind of from a more of an anecdotal standpoint, righties like the ball a little higher up and up and in a little more than and I don't know. I shouldn't say it.
Think about Michael Morris. His home run
$1 million to the Giants.
Correct. His home run ball. His home run
so
ball
cheap.
Was high. It was kind of high and inside. Kind of letter high inside corner, and he could just you can just torque that out of there.
Yeah, and just from a lefty perspective, it's just kind of where your natural swing plane is. It's just the sweet spot for lefties. I don't know if there's been any officially conducted research to look at swing paths, lefties versus righties, to say, oh, this is where they generate most of their bat speed, in this plane versus this plane or whatever. I don't really know. I just remember, hitting in high school and briefly in college and down and in, and it was gone. Anything else, I was worthless. So, which is why I was a pitcher. So,
down and in. Very good. Okay. Well, let's just. Anybody have any thoughts about? I think Matt Williams had his press conference with the winter meetings. And actually, Stu, you should talk about the winter meetings. Period, because you went and we spent all that money on you going. So,
yes.
Why don't you give us your thoughts about Williams and some of the things that he said, and I think we'll try and end on this. We could talk more, but I don't want to go forever here. So,
I don't know. He seems like just what the Nats need, as far as his outlook, and he's doing a. It seems like he has a nice mix of kind of the old school way that really endeared people to Davey, and also kind of the things that Rizzo does from a kind of a scouting heavy perspective as a general manager. And he's also bringing on new coaches and things like that, the defensive coordinator, or whatever you want to call it. So it seems like he has a nice mix of, this is how the old guard does it. There are new things coming along to help improve the game. Let's take a look at how those play in how they play a role in winning ball games. Yeah, I like Matt Williams. I was actually – we played at the same college very briefly, not together, obviously. So a lot of what I see him doing as a manager, I remember our college coach doing. So it's kind of weird from my perspective, just saying, like, that's Coach Dallimore. You learned that from Coach D, man. You're not doing anything new. Anyway, but, I really like Matt Williams. He's a stand-up guy. I have a weird bias, though. But yeah, winter meetings were a blast. A lot of people watching. Got to see Andre Dawson, Jack Morris. Whoa. Saw Mike Rizzo a lot.
Nice.
As far as the GMs were concerned, he was probably the most visible one there, just being out and about and talking to people. And
he's
maybe
also
the only one
polished.
Yeah.
What's that?
He's also highly polished. We said on the top of his head there.
Yes. And the only other more visible, more highly polished guy up top there was Jack Zarensic, and I think a lot of what he was doing was more marketing, or I shouldn't say marketing, more PR, just with what has been written about him and his approach to managing, general managing, I should say. It seemed like a lot of PR moves just to be out there and be seen and things like that. But yeah, it was very good. A lot going on. Some talk about concussions and obviously home plate collisions and things like that. So a lot coming out of it. And yeah, it was just weird to see guys like John Heyman and, you know, Buster Olney on their phones twittering or texting away and going and then suddenly running off
sources
to their rooms. It's like, okay, what happened? You know?
Right.
So yeah.
Okay. Other thoughts on Matt Williams? I mean, he went and visited Jason Wirth in the offseason, mm-hmm. It sounds like. He's managed to make the rounds with the players. Seemed excited about coaching or managing. I mean, duh, I don't know. It's not really insightful, sorry.
I want to see some ball games. I want to see some ball games. I want to see some bullpen management. I want to see, you know, these are the things he hasn't done in the big leagues. So I've got no book on him.
Enough of your emotional feelings towards a manager. What will he do?
I mean,
that's fair.
The defensive shifting. The best thing I heard about the defensive shifting was the confirmation that this is now an organization-wide thing.
Okay.
So that they were going to be going up and down the organization and shifting everybody, which I think it cannot be overstated how important that is for the Nats organization as a whole. Because that means this is bigger than just the big league skipper. If it's that big across the organization, it's got to be coming in from Rizzo, and it is the most progressive move the Nats have made in a while, I think.
I like the idea too of having a guy that's not afraid to admit that he's learning as well, and I think, you know, the comparison I made was when you go down in the minors and you see guys playing for to earn their keep. I like the idea that we have that right now in our manager. I think, you know, we all know what Davey Johnson was, but to have a guy that's got to build his reputation from the foundation right now, I like what I've heard so far, and I like that he sounds like he's not afraid to stand up to some of the personalities. You know, we saw by July, Davey kind of checked out for the year, and I
definitely
like that. I don't expect to see that, regardless of what comes down the pipe from
can't
that.
Can't wait for the Joe West Matt Williams confrontation. Can't wait. Angel Hernandez,
Fight yeah. City.
Oh man,
yeah.
Hirschbeck. Oh,
fantasy fights in your head over there. I like it.
I have to confess, I loved Lou Piniella as a manager, not because he had any merit as a manager of baseball teams, but because he threw the most epic tantrums. They were operatic. They were beautiful. Frank Robinson was the same way, and we haven't had that in Washington in years.
Cool. I'm in. I don't know what else to say. You're right. It's going to be cool to watch somebody not asleep at the... The two times we got to see Davey up close were in the we were in the press room with him, and I still couldn't hear what he was saying. He was so just checked out was the only word for it, you know.
When 900 years you reach, sound is good. You will not.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's about it for Nats news. The only other thing was Lindsay left. We don't have an in-game host, but we're okay. the search continues for the new Clint, and the
can we stop it?
No, we could all maybe send the resumes in that say no one, or I don't know.
Yeah, is it? I don't know. I haven't pulled every team, but are the Nats really the only one? Because every I've been to a handful of ballparks, not as much as a lot of you guys, but
right,
it seems like it's the only place that has like some sort of infield
the
in-game host. Maybe Pittsburgh?
The Braves had one at spring training. I don't know if he makes it up to the he looked like he might make up the trip to Turner Field or whatever they're going to be playing in soon.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of where else I've seen one. I don't think I saw one in New York, either New York Stadium or Philly.
Yeah.
I feel like it might be a DC thing because the Wizards for many years had Big Tigger running you remember? Yeah, no, right.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah.
Yeah, Big Tigger behind the decks and like it, like during the breaks and play. Now that was amazing.
You're right. Washington Wizards starting five.
Yeah. I mean I mean, that was great. That was
right.
That was great, especially because that Big Tigger might have been the best thing you saw
right.
in the stadium that night.
And
so
Brett was like, he was sort of like the DJ for the Caps. Like he wasn't really a host, but he would DJ and they would, you know, make a point of pointing him out.
Yeah, so I feel like it.
And he's not busy goaltending.
I mean, I feel like it's a DJ. I feel like it's a DC thing. You know, I would hope for more DC things at the ballpark. Can we have like go-go night? That would be awesome.
Right.
There we go.
I'm okay with the coast. I mean, okay, Hobie, I'm sorry. Never mind. I retract.
Sorry, I'm Hobie.
But secretly, I was like, I mean, they do a very good job of keeping a lot of that stuff within the confines of between innings and whatnot. So it doesn't really, you know, bother me. I mean, she had like zero personality and she also seemed very checked out. She was, you know, relied on that crutch of a catchphrase. How cool is that? She couldn't say that enough. But whatever. I'm sure they'll find someone. I'm more worried about the Lipton sponsored wave, which I think they might actually. They signed that deal last year, and they never really did it this year.
And then it died.
Right, and I just don't know if that's just they like, we didn't really get it off the ground, and we're going to be ready for 2014.
run. No, it's not happening again. Well, it couldn't possibly happen during the weeknight. Again, the weeknight crowd will not stand for this.
Literally, because that's what you do for a wave, is
correct.
You stand.
I mean, the weeknight. Mm-hmm. The weeknight.
Nope.
I wonder who the secret national is going to be.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I want Elijah Dukes.
Nook Logan.
Just,
where is he going with the present?
Just for the fun of it. Just like, yo, dog.
Like,
here I am.
Can you get him on a work release now?
Yeah, poor guy. You know, I sit here and joke. Hopefully he's doing better.
I mean, you know,
Elijah Dukes the guy who was 15 minutes late and got fined because he was working at the kids charity? Who was that guy? Or was that Lasting's Millage?
I think that was Lasting's.
That might have been Millage. Yeah, that might have been Millage.
No, the great.
Getting all my terrible outfielders confused. Yeah.
I think the best secret nat would probably be Dimitri Young, actually.
Well, hey.
Right? I mean, Dimitri Young is.
I'd be a little scared of what gift he came up
Christian
with.
Guzman,
yeah.
The goose. Yeah.
The goose.
The goose. Felipe Lopez. Jose Vidro. Yay! If I had to pick an X-Nat, let's end with that and then we'll wrap up.
Favorite
X-Nat. Who would your favorite X-Nat secret, if somebody, some secret Nat Santa was going to show up to your door and he's no longer on the team, who would he be? And I've said a couple names. I'm going to go, no, I'm the host. I'm gonna wait. Go ahead. I'll give you guys. I don't want to step on anyone else's.
Mine probably doesn't really count because he's still in the majors. But I'm a huge Alfonso Soriano fan.
That's cool.
I can't quite even put my finger on. But you know, his tenure there was about a day. But if he was a Nat, and I would like if he had shown up.
He did well as a Nat too. Good job.
Did.
All right, Stu. Stu's next.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would be Levo, just for the fun of it.
Yeah, Levo's a good X-Nat.
And just for him to be like dressed up in a Santa suit and like a beard, I would pay to see that.
Oh my God, throwing gloves from his bag into the stands.
Yeah.
Like he did that one time. Amazing.
Feliz Navidad, man. You know?
I love him. Kid because we love. Jared?
For me, I think it's a coin flip between Ryan Church and Brian Schneider.
I kept wanting to say Ryan Church. Those are good ones. Yeah,
Schneider, I like that one.
Yeah. All right.
Even though he ended to Philly.
That's okay. John Lennon's going to end to Philly, so. Maybe not on the terms he wanted. But
Yeah.
All right, Weege.
Chad Cordero.
Chad that's Cordero. What I was going to. I got to come up with a different one.
Chad Cordero, the chief, the bouncy. I would like him to come up in a festive, fur trimmed, flat brimmed Santa hat.
Nice.
With tinsel on the flat brim.
Yeah, right. Boy.
Yeah.
You open the door and he just fist pumps straight away.
Being kind of new to jump on the Nats bandwagon, I think I came on in like what 2009. I think that was the earliest.
No, that gets you the most spiritual merit because it was the hardest to love them.
That was the worst.
Okay, well, there you go. So, yeah, I came on 2009, maybe even 2010. Or 2010. 2010. And there's one player that I'm kind of struggling with the name, but I think Adam Dunn.
Yeah.
Was
nice.
He was kind of the powerhouse when I kind of jumped on board, and then he left. Then he was gone. And but I do remember him being kind of a powerhouse, and you know, he had country music, and I liked that. So.
Yeah, he was great because he was
Phil Collins. Yes.
Oh.
In the mind of the casual fan, he was Adam LaRoche before Adam LaRoche was Adam LaRoche.
He made it cool.
He did. Yeah, it was like Adam Dunn was the first guy I remember that people were pissed off that left. And he was just they're like, how are you gonna let him go? Well, actually Soriano was maybe the first guy.
I was extend Fonzie the whole time. The summer of Fonzie was a magic summer.
Right. you know, you can't have a Nats panoply without mentioning Nick Johnson. So I'm gonna mention Nick Johnson as an ex Nat who is never gonna get the credit he deserves. He was awesome, and he just never got it together, and I just want him to come over. I kind of want to have a beer with Nick Johnson.
It could have
been. And his Twitter is so funny. He's like, he could not care less about baseball.
Sexy feet 24.
It's amazing.
Yes.
He's cool. So I would have Nick Johnson over, and I would just, for the whole point of like, you know, come on and have a beer on me. That's what I want to do. So.
And he'd have like 10 with you, from what I remember. I have friends that are friends with him. They grew up together in Sacramento. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Very talented.
I like that. We all came up with good ones. That was good. Yeah, we had a good little roster there. I liked it.
It's pretty. You'll
good job, panel.
You'll note that it's an 05-06 heavily. It's a very heavily 05-06.
Yeah, there's nobody on this team, right? Well,
they're so endearing.
Right?
Yeah,
they were lovable. Nats.
Yeah, because
misery loves company.
No what? John Roush. No.
John Roush.
Ryan Langerhans. I mean, come on.
With the Christmas wreath on his neck.
Yes.
That'd be fitting.
Tattooed on his neck.
Oh my. Okay. Well, we should wrap this up. We had a very nice podcast. If you want to get a hold of so tell you what, we'll go around the room and you guys mention what you're writing and where you're writing and where we can find you on Twitter. But Alyssa's you're in basketball season now.
I am. I've been a little MIA the last week due to other work obligations, but I see the Wizards are exactly where I left them, essentially. this team has actually been I've gotten talking about Misery Loves Company. I'm excited still for this year. I'm holding on to hope. Otto Porter Jr.'s finally playing, which is nice. I was thinking that wasn't going to happen this year at one point. So, there's always seats available with anyone's name on it. If you want to come out to a Wizards game, I think this is the year to hop on the wagon, I would say.
Okay. And we can read your Nats and Wizards work at?
At District Sports page.
Okay. And on Twitter?
At A. Wallace, but my last name is W-O-L-I-C-E.
Very good. Stu.
At T. Clifford Specs. Do most of my writing these days over at Beyond the Box Score, beyondtheboxscore.com.
I've been very pleasantly excited about. I've been very happy to read that. It's been a good site, you guys.
And Mike Trout's mom is a big fan of the site now, apparently.
Yes. And we also have another high profile follower, Seth Myers.
Ooh,
the Seth Myers.
I don't know. I guess he's a Sox fan.
That's okay.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah. And then I also do some other writing for another team in the American League nearby,
you
in
can
the state of Maryland.
That's fine.
I don't know. Yeah, Camden Depot. So yeah, check out my stuff there. So that's where I'll be writing.
Jared.
On Twitter, I'm at SC via DC, and I may or may not be writing for Nats 101, but I'll definitely be checking all of Frank's statistical work when he posts.
Yes, my math checker. And we always enjoy it. And Jared has an open. He has the account password. He can just go in and write whatever he wants. So he's trusted. Him and Cork can kind of do what they want now. Although nice. Court still insists I like everything, look everything over. He's working with the net still. Weej
at OUIJ on Twitter, and I write about the Nats very occasionally when I can at natstradamus.wordpress.com. And to fill the void during the off season, I have been watching the Wizards lose close games, and trying to teach myself analog synthesis, which is really, which has been really interesting. I've begun like moving between Emerson, Lake and Palmer and like Acid House. It's a really strange musical world I'm beginning to inhabit.
Well, you bought a synthesizer too, so you're or a Would you buy the?
Excuse the synth geekery. Korg MS-20 Mini, and I've been going all Daft Punk.
I want you to do the music for this podcast eventually. Is why I'm.
I was going to do that, but it's just like it's monophonic though, so it's going to be a little too switched on Bach or like Clockwork Orange.
We'll make it work.
I don't know. I don't know if you can be down with a Clockwork Orange type sound.
It's a whole new world next season, so we'll try anything. Go ahead, Susan.
And you can find me at Smeshy on Twitter. And the only thing I write is lesson plans for 5-year-olds. So, although I at work I am the Nationals person, go-to person. So. I do a lot of talking, not a lot of writing.
Yes.
Nicely done.
Yes. And lessons planned for 5-year-olds. Sometimes that's how my blog posts come out. So, not really. I'm the 5-year-old. It's good. Somebody was bugging me. Like, you know, somebody was joking that I take a week to write a post. And it's like, I'm learning most of what I'm writing anyway. Like the war thing. I don't want to, because if I write the war thing wrong, first of all, I'm misinforming the public. But worse, everyone who knows what war is going to come find me and yell at me about all the things I got wrong. The whole first two paragraphs is literally like, this is an overview. Please, I know there are things missing.
It's a mea culpa. Yeah.
Just get off my case. All right. Yeah. I'm trying to get people into the box, but we write it. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's hard to keep your, it's hard to keep your on the clock personality, on the clock as it were.
Yeah.
The fine print follows you everywhere.
It does. It does. Being a lawyer. But you can find the baseball musings at Nationals 101. Every once in a while, I'll muse about something, especially these last 2 weeks with DC Sports have just been outstanding for controversy. Like, I haven't been able to not tweet about the football team, and I don't want to get into it. I know you want to say something, but I think you need to refrain, Leach. You can also find me at The Real Frank Gal, where I'm much freer with what I think about other topics. I try and keep Nationals 101 mostly about baseball. Facebook.com/Nationals101, Nats101.com. Search Nationals101 onto iTunes to find this podcast, which you somehow found. Hand gestures. Are there anything else? Are we good? We mentioned everything. Nationals101@gmail.com. We're always taking questions and comments and suggestions. I'd like to thank everyone for coming and working on the podcast today. It's been a very fun Saturday afternoon. Nats Fest is the 25th of January. We will be there. We will make up some sort of plan for the podcast. We will either be out. We will certainly be at the after party if we are, you know, which, let me tell you, if you want to meet some people, come to the Nationals, not the Nationals 101. You know what? I'm branding it tough. I don't care what Dave Morris thinks. It used to be it's the Half Street Irregulars after party last year was pretty special, not just for the copious amounts of alcohol, but the pretty cool people who showed up. So
we could just set the podcast
That's kind of what I want to do. I want to have like a Sammy Davis Jr. after hours 70s. You know, just have the Rat Pack drop in on the microphones and everyone's drinking and talking and nobody remembers that they were on a podcast. And then Charlie Slows gets fired for, you know, we don't want Charlie Slows fired. But he was really great last year at that party. He was the best man in the world. So
if you're listening to this podcast and you're doubtful about going to Nats Fest like I am, I'm not going to Nats Fest, but I'm sure as hell going to this wherever this after party is the best thing that's going to happen.
But point is that we will figure out something around that time for the podcast. We'll have we'll talk about it, or we'll bring a microphone and maybe we'll record some people talking about things and not actually embarrass them. But thank you so much for listening, everyone, and have a good night. Bye, everyone.